The Beat Podcast is brought to you by Nutricia and is designed for healthcare professionals only.
Dr. Ben Green, a registered nutritionist and medical affairs research manager at Nutricia, is asking the questions in this episode.
Hello, and welcome to the Beat Podcast. My name is Ben Green, and I'm a research manager at Nutricia, where I design and deliver multi-centre clinical research trials. Now today, with Lisa Green, we want to discuss the role and benefits of peptide-based enteral tube feeds with you. So in this episode, we hope to provide you with a background to peptide-based tube feeds, and we'll look at some of the key characteristic differences compared to polymeric counterparts. We will also discuss what patient groups may benefit from taking a peptide-based feed, and in particular, what benefits we may observe whilst using one. And it may not be common knowledge, but Nutricia have recently launched a new high-energy, high-protein peptide-based tube feed. And together with Lisa's team and many others throughout the UK, we recently collaborated on a clinical trial and successfully published the study findings. So we'll also dedicate some time in today's conversation to pull out some of the key findings and experiences of this trial. And I will also make sure that a link to the publication is provided in the podcast bio. But without further ado, I would like to welcome Lisa Green to the Beat Podcast. And to address the cat in the room, no, we aren't related, but we do make a fantastic green team. So welcome, Lisa. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Ben. Thanks for inviting me along. This is officially my first podcast.
Now, before we dive into the contents of today's conversation, I wondered if you could please introduce yourself and share some details about your work background.
So my name's Lisa Green. I work as a clinical lead dietitian in Halifax, and I lead a small community team with a very varied caseload. And half of our work is dedicated towards home enteral tube feeding. As a team, we also see patients with other long-term conditions, and this may include respiratory disease, frailty, and many complex neuro conditions such as motor neuron disease. If members of our audience think that the community dietetics is less complex, or dare I say the B word for boring, then actually they couldn't be more wrong. We are caring for more complex patients in community and in their own homes than ever before. And my colleagues in the MDT, such as physios and OT and speech therapists, are all experiencing this as well. I've been a qualified dietitian for over 20 years. Gosh, that makes me feel old. And I've worked in many different disciplines in both the acute and the community. I absolutely loved working with the gastro colleagues. And also on intensive care in other roles before coming into community. And I think all my experience to date has equipped me to deal with this ever-changing and complex caseload. I especially enjoy working with our home enteral tube feeding patients, and visiting patients in their own home or community settings really does give you a different perspective on how you see them compared to when seeing them in an acute hospital setting. And before the pandemic, I also got lots of cups of tea and an occasional lunch too. So it's a post I very much enjoy.
Oh, well, thank you for that background. And I think based on your experience, our listeners are in very good hands. So just to sort of share with the listeners, and I'm sure many of them are very familiar with sort of the need for enteral tube feeding, especially in a hospital and community setting. But I just wondered whether you could perhaps recap the need for enteral tube feeding and then potentially discuss the different types of enteral tube feeds that are available for use in clinical practice.
Okay, Ben. So as previously mentioned, our caseload in community is very complex and very diverse. We care for over 90 patients on home enteral feeding. And I feel that the demographics of this caseload has changed, especially in the 10 years that I've been working in the community team. We're seeing more younger patients needing enteral tube feeding, and they may have a range of conditions, including gastrointestinal disorders, such as chronic pancreatitis, gastroparesis, and inflammatory bowel disease, and these patients will require supplementary enteral tube feeding. We're also seeing more cancer survivors who require longer term enteral tube feeding, and younger patients with conditions such as Huntington's, motor neuron disease, MS. Our team also cares for many young adults with learning and physical disabilities. And I would have said 10 years ago, our caseload included much more elderly stroke patients. But as I've already alluded to, it's quite a change in caseload. I think as healthcare professionals in both the acute and community teams, we are getting better at making decisions about tube feeding, and this may be the reason why the caseloads are changing. So as you can see from some of these examples, with a diverse range of patient conditions and reasons for enteral tube feeding, I can absolutely say that not one of our patients and communities' feeding plans are exactly the same. And this is why, as dietitians, we need a wide range of enteral tube feeds to both meet the needs of our patients and the conditions that they have. So without these adequate enteral feeding plans, and without monitoring them, this patient group can become seriously undernourished and dehydrated. Any imbalance in nutrition or simply not getting the feeding times right can have an impact on patients' quality of life. They may have elevated protein and energy requirements, and if this was the case, my choice of feed may include some of the more energy-dense polymeric formulas. It's important to mention, actually, that enteral feeds are available as whole protein or polymeric feeds, and also a range of peptide-based tube feeds. We've got patients in our caseload who tolerate polymeric feeds and those who require peptide-based tube feeds.
Okay, fantastic. I mean, that is a real clear description as to sort of the importance of enteral tube feeding for patients with many, many conditions. But just pulling on sort of the two different formulations, what exactly is a peptide-based tube feed and how does it differ to its polymeric counterpart?
Okay, Ben, good question. I suppose the best way to describe a peptide-based enteral feed is that the protein in these feeds is already pre-digested. And I explain this to patients by telling them that the digestive system doesn't have to work as hard. And that peptide-based formulations have been shown to metabolise quicker than whole proteins. I suppose it's a bit like comparing mince compared to a T-bone steak when comparing the peptide and the polymeric feeds.
It's a great example just to sort of voice with the patients to really help their understanding as to the differences of the formulations. But thinking about, again, those initial differences that you have highlighted, are there any particular patient groups you would favour using a peptide-based feed over a polymeric feed? And if so, why would it be beneficial to those patient groups?
Okay, so thinking about the patient groups, I would say that any of my patients presenting, perhaps with a gastrointestinal tolerance issues, and this is more likely to be diarrhoea, bloating, nausea or vomiting, and in these cases where other causes have been ruled out, actually I'm sure many of my dietetic colleagues will empathise with me that any tolerance issues, everybody always blames the feed first, and it's definitely not always the case. So as I mentioned earlier, we are seeing more complex patients in the community, and to give an example of when I might use a peptide-based feed, I recently had a referral for a gentleman. He doesn't actually have a diagnosis, but his symptoms are all presenting as gastrointestinal malabsorption. He'd been in hospital for over 4 months and he'd lost 20% of his body weight, and he'd actually been fed parenterally during his hospital stay. But he was desperate to get home for Christmas. He was really quite fed up and he agreed to have a jejunal tube placed. And my plan for this gentleman was to build him up on a peptide-based feed at home. And I took some time explaining the role of peptide feeds and how that might help his absorption. He may do better on this feed. And I'm really pleased to say he's been on this feed now since before Christmas, and he's already gained 3 kilos. So I would say that's a really positive outcome already.
Yeah, definitely. I would totally agree with that. And I suppose thinking about that gentleman and any other patients with varying conditions, sort of in your clinical practice, would those patients you mentioned take a polymeric feed first, and then if they don't tolerate that, would they move on to a peptide-based feed?
Yeah, we don't particularly have any pathways in place, but generally, I think dietetic colleagues would agree with this, we tend to start most patients on a standard polymeric feed first before considering peptide-based feeds. And this, I think, historically has been due to the availability of peptide feeds and how these might meet our patients' requirements. And they've always also been a more expensive option. Now, I suppose my thoughts on this have changed a little bit, and that's been through being involved in the trial. Personally, being involved in the trial really helped me to think outside of the box and perhaps just do things that little bit different. And I felt I identified patients who, although they had tolerance issues, they weren't major tolerance issues, but I definitely had concerns about them meeting their nutritional requirements. And it was for these reasons that I included them in the trial on a peptide-based feed. And this was generally to better meet the requirements and hopefully just improve their tolerance issues as well.
Okay, and those few last patients that you mentioned there, were they sort of taking a peptide-based feed before trialling the new feed by Nutritia, or were they taking a polymeric feed? I mean, do you tend to see patients change the formulation that they would take? Perhaps they were taking a peptide-based feed, but for some reason the formulation wasn't benefiting them, so they move on to another peptide-based formulation?
I would say the patients that we had in the study, there was already, I think one of the patients was already taking, prescribed a peptide-based feed, and some of the other patients were on an established polymeric feed. So again, it depends which patient and very much on how they're tolerating their existing feed. And as you know, having worked with dietitians for quite a long time, you know, patients need to change. So patients may tolerate standard feeds and then they may not do. And it's just a case of changing what feed you use to best meet that patient's needs at that time.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's all incredibly interesting. And just to focus a bit more on Nutritia's new peptide-based feed, if you could consider the nutritional composition of that, are there any immediate benefits you can recall versus other peptide-based feeds?
I would say when I was first approached about the trial and given the information about the HEHP feed, I was quite excited about the protein content being 100% whey. I was aware that there was evidence available to support whey proteins being metabolised quicker than other proteins. And also the fact that there's evidence around, say, that casein may curdle in the stomach and that may cause it to hang around, I suppose, is a not very clinical way of putting it, but lots of casein in enteral tube feeds may actually slow down the stomach emptying. So I was excited about trialling a feed which was 100% whey. I was also really looking forward to seeing how I got on with the protein and calorie content because this was, I felt, was going to meet my patients' requirements better at 1.5 cal per mil and the 7.5 grams of protein per 100 mil. So those were all very appealing to me as a dietitian.
Okay, yeah, so I suppose what we do tend to see is those casein-based formulations really slowing gastric emptying. But I think outside of the energy and protein content of this feed, are there sort of any other key characteristics of the new peptide-based feed which you feel are particularly beneficial for patients?
I think, again, for me, I was very much looking forward to seeing how patients got on with the lipid profile. I know that the trial feed was a 60% MCT fat profile. And again, there's lots of evidence around to say that the MCT fat is absorbed in the body quicker. And then again, for me, the trial formulation really stood out as being higher in sodium potassium than other products that are available. And I felt, for me as a dietitian, that the higher levels would better meet my patients' requirements. So again, another really positive thing for me.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Because I know in particular, some dietitians may be concerned about the higher sodium and potassium content. So it's great to hear your experience, though we do appreciate that products are not a one-size-fits-all approach, and what may be suitable for one patient may not be so suitable for the next. But I do hope that your feedback mitigates any worries that dietitians are facing prior to prescribing. But sort of thinking back to those nutritional characteristics and sort of potential benefits of Nutritia's new peptide-based tube feed, could you pull out any examples of patients either from your caseload or from patients who were recruited to the clinical trial where the above points have really proven proof of concept?
Okay, so a patient that I can think of was one of my younger adult patients with a diagnosis of gastroparesis, and she was considered for the trial because I felt that although she was absorbing and nutritionally stable on a polymeric feed, the volume that she was taking wasn't acceptable to her, and this was having an impact on her quality of life. So I talked through with her the reasons for maybe choosing a peptide feed based on this being easier to digest, and also about the nutritional breakdown and this possibly having a really significant benefit in terms of gastric emptying, especially since she had a diagnosis of gastroparesis. So she was considered, and actually she was really motivated. She was quite energised to be involved in the trial. And, you know, she did tell me she very much enjoyed it as well. But aside from that, her symptoms did improve, and her main baseline symptoms were mainly nausea and bloating. And as a result of being on the trial peptide feed, she was able to, you know, a significant improvement of these symptoms. And she felt she was then able to stay on the feed for longer and have more days where she was feeding. So she became better nourished. And also because she was feeling better in herself and had less symptoms of nausea, she actually was able to eat a small amount of diet, and for her, this was real improvement in her quality of life. So, and that's, you know, she really hit home how, as a dietitian, you can guide and facilitate changes, and it has a really good outcome.
Oh, no, that's lovely to hear. And I have to say, this sort of seemed to be reflected across the vast majority of patients who were recruited to the trial. And we had recruits with a host of different diagnoses, from pancreatitis, gastroparesis, as you just pointed out, to cerebral palsy. So it's actually great to see that these benefits are true across many different conditions. And to sort of just touch quickly on the other findings that we observed in the clinical trial, I mean, we saw significant improvements in the incidence and intensity of diarrhoea. Compliance significantly improved when compared to baseline regimens, and with this, energy and protein intake significantly increased, which allowed patients to better meet their energy and protein requirements. And sort of when compared to the patient's baseline regimens, a significantly lower volume of Nutritia's new peptide-based tube feed was actually needed to bring about these observations. And interestingly, over 70% of the patients who took part in the trial were actually taking a peptide-based feed at baseline. But I suppose this all comes with the caveat that the findings of this trial are constrained to a relatively small number of patients over a 4-week observational period. And while sort of literature concerning peptide-based feeding in the community is lacking, I do believe we may be starting to see a compositional advantage versus other peptide-based tube feeds. Though this is speculative, and of course more work is always recommended to clarify this. Now, sort of product aside, I appreciate many listeners may also be interested in hearing your experience of supporting a clinical trial. Now, I know you and your team had never supported a trial of this nature before, so this may be particularly prudent for anyone with limited or no research experience, yet who are interested in supporting future trials. So I therefore wondered if you could possibly share with the listeners your experience of supporting research and the ACBS trial. Did you take away any key learnings? Can you share any advice with other dietitians considering taking part in research trials? And I suppose, what opportunities have there been post-trial that you've been able to take away following this collaboration?
Okay, well, thanks for that, Ben. First of all, taking part in clinical research, I absolutely have to say it's both exciting and rewarding. And it was great kudo for our small community team. It was, like you mentioned, our first experience taking part in a clinical trial. And it was my first, hopefully of many, being the principal investigator for a project. Definitely lots of learning and lots of takeaways. And I'll just mention a few that really stood out for me. With a fantastic research and development team at Calderdale and Huddersfield NHS Trust. And I'm embarrassed to say that I hadn't realised just how established that team was. I was really lucky to work with Tracy Wood, who is the lead research nurse for that team. And it was a very enjoyable experience. And I'm sure other trusts also have great R&D teams and they will support you. There is a lot of new jargon that I now know and understand, but I couldn't have done that without their support. So again, if you're thinking about getting interested, chat to your R&D team. You'll probably find, like ours, they're a really valuable source of information. Another really great thing for me as well is actually seeing the manuscript published and feeling really proud of that, we contributed to, you know, something quite great that is going to change the availability of feeds for future patients. So again, that was a really good thing for me. Personally, I also got better at doing tweets and Twitter, and actually found it a brilliant way to showcase some of the work that we were doing and sharing that with colleagues at Calderdale and Huddersfield NHS Trust, and also dietetic colleagues across the country. So for me, again, another positive point. Thinking about the patients and their involvement, goodness, that absolutely trumps everything else. It was so rewarding to see how motivated they were. They wanted to take part, they wanted to fill out their research booklets. I think they felt quite special actually, which was great. And because we did allocate more time for the baseline assessments, you got to revisit a lot of the work and ideas and previous regimes, and very much felt like it was a gold standard assessment, which sadly with current pressures and caseload pressures, we don't always get time to do. So from a dietitian point of view, that was particularly rewarding. And I'm going to share something with you now. There was a financial reward for taking part, and with some of this money, we've been able to purchase a set of portable wheelchair scales and also a portable weighing hoist for our community patients. And these are both pieces of equipment we didn't have before and already really, really helping with our nutritional plans and dietetic assessments. And also a great resource for my nursing and occupational therapy colleagues as well, where they need accurate weights of our community patients for various pieces of equipment. So I feel being involved in this with that financial reward has really helped us to put something back, and I very much thank you for that. So very, very enjoyable, very rewarding, and you're a great team to work with. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you so much for sort of sharing that feedback and your experience, because honestly, it is so heartwarming to hear. And I mean, as an individual, I'm very passionate about nutrition and research, but it's the experiences and the benefits that our patients and collaborators share with us that really gives me energy. And I've thoroughly enjoyed talking with you today, Lisa. It's been an absolute pleasure. So I think this is a really nice place to draw our conversation to a close. And I also want to extend a thanks to our listeners and hope that you've all taken away something valuable from our conversation today that you may consider adopting in your clinical practice going forward. And if you would like more information about Nutritia, Nutritia's new peptide-based enteral tube feed, then please visit nutritia.co.uk, where you will find data cards, evidence materials, and a host of resources. And if you are interested in supporting future clinical trials, then please either notify your account manager, reach out to me directly at ben.green@nutritia.com, or via Twitter at @DrBen_Green. Thank you very much for listening.
To keep up to date with future episodes of the Beat podcast from Nutritia, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. For more updates on the show, as well as lots of other educational content from Nutritia, sign up to our newsletter at www.nutritia.co.uk. We'll be right back.